So, okay. Welcome, everybody, to the kernel panel. Yeah, it's all about the kernel today, so the important stuff. And I'm glad that you are here in this early hour after the social event. And I'd like to welcome Heinz Maueshagen. He's working at Red Hat since 5 years, so former Sistina. And he's working on a device mapper, testing something about device mapper rate. So, yeah, welcome, Heinz.
Thanks, Jan. Can everybody hear me? All right. So this talk is about a new device mapper target. I'm going to explain a bit what target actually means later, which adds the capability to do RAID 4 and RAID 5 to the well-known device mapper platform. So the top of the talk covers the requirements for such a RAID 4 and RAID 5 implementation. It addresses a bit of the device mapper architecture and its features so that you can understand how it fits into the general framework there. And of course, the architecture of the target itself will be covered. Targets enable you to define or device mapper in general the mapping of virtual devices in so-called mapping tables, so we will be talking about that respective syntax as well. And if you want to try the DM RAID 4 and 5 target now, you can use the DM setup tool, which will be or is delivered with the device mapper package itself, in order to create actual RAID sets and try it out. There is project status summary and URLs in the end, so the URLs give you the pointers where to retrieve the patch. And of course, disclaimer, this is alpha software, it can destroy your data, blah blah blah. So what are the actual requirements? What is it we want to gain with a RAID 4 and 5 solution? Essentially, we want to gain resilience by grouping N devices into so-called RAID sets. And N needs to be larger than 2, because with RAID 4 and 5, you've got an XOR-based parity calculation algorithm, and of course, you need to XOR at least 2 pieces of data, creating another third piece, and that gives you this N larger than 2. You can, of course, have an arbitrary amount of disks in a RAID 4 or 5 set, but if it comes to the degraded mode, that one disk fails, all the disks need to be read in order to recreate the lost data, which gives you, of course, a performance bottleneck. So practical numbers typically are in the range of 3 up to 7 disks, which you group into RAID sets. Already said, you grab at least 2 pieces of data, XOR them to create the redundancy information, the so-called parity. And basically, that means you need to decide how to address where the data goes for a certain sector and where the parity information goes. And that's what this requirement is about. You need selectable allocation algorithms for data and parity, which means that essentially, if you have a certain sector and retrieve that or store that on your RAID set, you need to calculate, is it the first disk to retrieve the data, and is disk number 3 the parity disk, and that's being done using 4 selectable algorithms. This is necessary because solutions out there, in particular in the other RAID space, these are these cheap controllers you already know in your on your main boards, for example, the Symbios or LSI Logic or what have you, things you typically buy with actual main boards, they come with different solutions. So there's one solution rotating left asymmetric, the other rotates right, and so on. That's why we need selectable algorithms in order to support these given solutions with device mapper. And there is a short reference as well later with the DM Ray tool I already wrote, which supports these Adderite solutions on Linux. So there is an alpha implementation in DM Ray already for NVIDIA and the Intel Software Ray solution. And you can retrieve the patch I'm going to refer in the URL section to again in order to try that out. When we are talking about calculation parity, we need some memory to store the data in order to do the XOR calculations and create that parity information, and that's what we call stripes. So a stripe is essentially a memory object which has a so-called chunk hanging off for each involved disk. So if you've got a three disk set, you will be having stripes with three chunks of data and parity hanging off. So all the I/O to RAID set goes through stripes. And for performance reasons, you don't want to have just one stripe. You want to have a configurable amount, in other words, many stripes. That's why you need this stripe cache to hang the stripes off, to do the lookups, etc. I already covered that point. We use an XOR algorithm to calculate the parity chunks derived from the data chunks. And by the way, this algorithm is symmetric. That means if we go degraded, in other words, a disk in a set dies, we can retrieve the chunks off the remaining disks and use the very same software, the very same algorithm, to recreate the missing chunk, or to reconstruct, if you want to. So that's what this point with a single device failure means. And of course, if you set a new RAID set up, you need to initialize it. That means, you know, walk all the, say, chunks on each disk times n disk and create the respective parity information and store it. And if, for example, you have a degraded set and you replace the dead disk, you need to have that initialization function as well in order to regain the full resilience of your RAID set. So that's what the support for failed devices means, which essentially is the point that if you have a particular drive, may it be number one, two, or three, and say number two died, you need to have the possibility to say initialize that very replaced drive, number two, in the correct order of your set. So there's the selectable device to initialize. Let's see, with RAID 4, as opposed to RAID 5, has a dedicated parity device. So the parity chunks I was elaborating on before don't rotate, they just go to a particular device, which is sort of the, you know, negative point with RAID 4, because for each write you need to recreate the parity information for that particular stripe you are writing. That means you always write to the parity disk. And that slows down your performance, essentially. That's why RAID 5 got invented initially, because the parity chunks are rotating there. You don't bottleneck on a single parity device anymore. So, of course, you need to retrieve, or you need to provide the RAID device and set properties. You want to know what's the status of my device number two in my set, what's the status of my set, and so on. And there is an event mechanism in device mapper, so if a disk dies, there will be an error event which will be propagated up. And of course the software needs to support that. Let's move to the device mapper architecture in general so that you can better understand how targets fit into that. I have a simple picture later to maybe show that a bit better. So device mapper in general is a generic mapping runtime platform which we have since Linux 2.5. So it's shipped with every actual distribution. It's you know, a general purpose thing with regards to the fact that any application which needs virtual devices and which needs to set up particular mappings, say my address 0 of my virtual device should go to such and such slash dev slash SDA offset 4711 or so, can make use of this generic mapping runtime platform. The notion here is that we manage so-called mapped devices. These are the virtual devices, and they show, it's shown on the on another slide, they show up as slash dev slash mapper slash some name, and the name is up to you to define. So the mapping information itself, as I already mentioned before, is in so-called mapping tables, and those are ASCII formatted, so you can use an editor of your choice and create these mapping tables. Of course, unless you are a QA guy or some tester developer, this will be done by an application such as DMRAID. I already mentioned this is an application I wrote which supports Etarraid solutions on Linux 2.6, so you can map your high points in NVIDIA's and LSI logic and so on with that, using this device mapper architecture, running the DMRAID tool, which is typically hidden by some installer anyway, or LVM2, the second version of the logical volume manager, which is shipped with all the 2.6 based distributions, or IBM's EVMS or whatnot. So the idea is not to have an application in the kernel, just a generic subsystem functionality, and basically offer that to as many applications who want to create virtual devices. So the table loading actions, the mapping tables need to be loaded into the runtime so that you can actually, you know, read and write data to the virtual device. They happen online to reflect change layouts. So with the logical volume management, for example, you want to virtualize your storage. You want to grow and shrink your virtual devices, aka logical volumes. And that's why you need to reload mapping tables. Larger mappings, smaller mappings, changed mappings. So, and now we come to the mapping targets. This core functionality essentially doesn't know what to do with an I/O. This has been factored out using a virtual interface into these mapping targets, and DMRAID 4.5 is one example of those. Simpler ones such as linear, or more complex ones such as multipath, are other examples we already have. A snapshot, for example, is used for the logical volume snapshots. Probably a couple of people or maybe many already use those in order to do their consistent backups and so on. Of course, it should be device agnostic. It maps to arbitrary block devices such as SCSI, iSCSI, PADA, Parallel ADA, SATA, whatever. The mapping targets are essentially dynamically loadable modules. So if you have a system in production with device mapper running and we deliver a new mapping target, you can plug it in at runtime and oops, or you directly have the new mapping functionality. You don't need to stop your access to the given, maybe logical volumes being, you know, accessed using this device mapper platform. You can stack the map devices in order to create smarter mapping, such as, for example, a RAID 50 or whatever, RAID 10. Or you can create temporary stackings. That's what we do with the PV move in LVM2, that we create a temporary mirror on top of the old and the new mapping and move the data over. This is restartable when your system crashes and so on and so forth. The restriction with the 2 terabyte size limit is gone, because we have the large block device support in Linux 2.6, and the device mapper itself comes with a user space library. And the obvious reason for that is what I mentioned before, that as many applications as possible can make use of the device mapper functionality, such as DMRAID and LVM2 I already mentioned. and the test tool setup, sorry, the test tool DM setup, I'm going to elaborate a bit more later. I covered the namespace already, so if you say create me a map device called LinuxTag, you will have a slash dev slash mapper slash LinuxTag device node and can access that and do your MacFS, your whatever, FDIS doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but your arbitrary application can access that LinuxTag device, for example. So some simple, you know, made-up examples. I don't claim that this is, you know, real-life examples, but they work, actually. As already mentioned before, say you've got a virtual device, which we call map device, which has an address space starting at offset sector 0 and has a length of 10, 24 sectors. The size is by default 512 bytes. So this is what we call a segment. It has a starting sector address and a length. Then comes a keyword, and the keyword, for obvious reasons, selects the mapping target. The linear one is the most, one of the simpler ones, let's put it this way, and it maps to slash dev slash HDE1 offset 40. Why does it map to offset 40? Well, there might be some metadata up front the disk, and the data starts after the metadata, for example. Of course, targets can be more complex, such as a stripe target, so it uses more actual parameters or formal parameters. And the point is that essentially this is sort of grouped into three pieces. This is the segment definition, this is the keyword selecting the actual mapping target, and this is completely target-specific. So in other words, a target-specific list of parameters which can be essentially arbitrary long. So in this case, we define a segment just starting behind the other one before, length 2048, select the striped mapping target, so that other plug-in if you want so, and all these parameters starting with a 2 go to this stripe mapping target, and it can do whatever it wants with those. Of course, it does define two devices, namely HDE1 and HDF1, and respective offsets to map to, and a stride size of 64 sectors. So this is a simple stripe configuration. There's virtual devices as well. For example, the zero device, which for obvious reasons doesn't need any parameters, says, well, define me a segment starting at zero, length 10, 24, and if I access some sector from zero to, what is it, 10, 23, you always say, oh, okay, when I write, and you return me zeros in my data buffer when I read. So it doesn't make a whole lot of sense alone, but if you combine that with a snapshot on top, you've got a sparse device, which means you can run tests on 8 exabyte devices having physical disk space of maybe a couple of hundred gigabytes. Sounds rather slick to do scalability tests. Of course, you can store more than what your snapshot backing store is, but you can test if the, you know, address accesses work and so on and so forth. If you can store some metadata, which happens to be less than a couple of hundred gigabytes, I use that all the time in my test environments. And you can really try out how long it takes to MacFS some file system, which is rather big and rather annoying. Unless it's XFS, but I don't want to get in that story on Linux. So the other one here is an arrow device. So if you know I got an event, my device is dead, you can replace the mapping with the arrow mapping, which gives you much faster response on accesses to devices you know that they are already dead, right? So that's the use of an arrow device. Mirror, of course, is a bit more complex. We use a dirty lock with the mirroring, which tells us which areas of the mirror are actually having write IOs in flight and are subject to recovery. Of course, the core dirty lock is a transient one. It just lives in memory, but we do have a disk dirty lock, so that keeps the information persistent. And if your system crashes, we can retrieve the information of the dirty lock, which areas of the mirror we need to recover to regain block-level consistency between the mirrors or on the mirrors of a set. The rest here is essentially defining, you know, the number of mirrors. That could be three, of course, or more, and so on. Don't want to go into these details. So let's move over to DM RAID 4.5, my new stuff here. We already know that it fits into what I explained before, into a device mapper as a plugin, a so-called target. And it's the task of a target to handle the actual I.O. So basically in Linux 2.6 we've got the BIOS structure, and the BIOS structure has a lot of, you know, members, but in particular it says, well, this is for this device and it's for that sector. And the target can do whatever it wants with that. For example, in the linear case, it will add or subtract some, you know, offset, and it will replace the device address. Very, very simple. In RAID 4.5, things are slightly more complex, but anyway, it's completely hidden in the target. This essentially, the bullets here talk a bit about, you know, functions of the virtual interface between the device mapper core calling into the targets and the target itself. Of course, we need a constructor and destructor. I talked on the last slide about the target-specific parameters, and the constructor gets these parameters, such as, you know, there's two mirrors, and the mirror devices are slash dev slash something, and slash dev slash some other thing, and the offset, and so on. And what the constructor will do, it will allocate all memory it needs. It will pass these parameters. It will, you know, populate some metadata, some structure members, and do its job. The destructor, of course, is, you know, to tear things down, like deallocating memory, stopping some internally used kernel thread or so on. The mapping function itself is, if you want, so the core functionality of a mapping target, because as it says, it maps, so it gets the bio and can do what it wants with the bio data. In case of RAID 4.5, it needs, for example, to run the allocation algorithm I was talking about before to decide to which disk or device that particular I/O request is going to, or, you know, being read off. It needs to run the algorithm to decide which device will hold or holds the parity chunk for that particular I/O. We need a suspend resume. I already talked about the stripe cache. We need to fill the data in order to do the XOR calculation for the parity. So that means what we actually do is we copy the data across from the I/O request being handed down in terms of the bio, and copy that across to the chunks hanging off stripes. And when we are done with that and have worked in all the I/O requests we have at hand and calculated the parity, we of course write the data to the devices off the chunks hanging off the stripe, which is, if you want, so a background task. And that runs without any knowledge, you know, any awareness of the device mapper core. So the device mapper core needs to tell this target or other targets which do similar things, suspend what you are doing there. I'm going to change the mapping. Right, and once I'm done with that, resume your work. So that's what essentially suspend resume functionality in terms of that interface between device mapper core and the target or the targets is about. There is a status, a mapping table functionality. So status, for example, you can put ASCII information which can be retrieved using the device mapper library by any application using it. For example, by the DM setup tool I'm going to cover a bit later. And you put in ASCII information. So you can, of course, you should not put in like a novel or something because of buffer overflows or so. But you can essentially put up, is my device operational or whatnot, by showing an O for operational or what have you in the status output. Of course, we need to implement that stripe cache I covered before. We utilize an already given dirty lock I covered briefly with the mirroring example. Of course, when I do that background work here, I need to know, is there write activity going on to my devices of the RAID set. If at that point when write activity is going on, the system crashes, I don't have the information that, you know, this activity was given in that area. I can't recover from that, and that's what a persistent dirty log is about. Essentially, it keeps the persistent information. This area of your set needs to be resynchronized in order to regain block level consistency. So that's the main purpose of the dirty log. On top of that, we've got a so-called region hash. The unit being managed by the dirty log and the region hash is that so-called region. So we essentially slice the address space of the RAID set into configurable pieces. Of course, all have the same size, and that's the region size. And because more than one write I/O can be in flight to any given region at any given point in time, the region hash sort of counts those. And it switches the information, the dirty log, this region is dirty or not, on transitions from and to zero. So if there's, example, 10 writes in flight, when the first one was in flight to that particular region, the dirty log stored the information the region is dirty. And now it counts up to 10 and counts down, you know, 10s and IO 9 and so on down to 0, and then the dirty log will reflect the information that that particular region is clean. The target needs to have a main IO thread in order to do the background work I mentioned before, work data into, you know, stripes, and do the XOR calculation, do the flushing of stripes out to disk, or read data in from the disk into stripes, and so on and so forth. I'm making use of a thread abstraction, which is part of the Linux kernel, so-called work queues. It needs to handle stripes with end IOs. Of course, the IO is asynchronous. Devices are slow. So it can do some other work while IO is in flight. And then state on particular stripes changes in an end IO function. And the main IO thread needs to work those stripes, which contain, for example, actual up-to-date data read of the devices, and needs to basically end I/O all the BIOS which refer to that particular stripe, and now have actual read data which can be copied back to the BIOS and end I/O'd. It needs to, on the other hand, it needs to merge write data into the stripes, of course, calculation of the parity chunks. The chunk size, by the way, is a power of 2 times page size. So if you by chance define like a 32 kilobyte chunk size, for example, you would have 8 pages, that right? 8 times 4, yeah. 8 pages hanging off the stripe times the number of devices. So this is completely configurable with this constraint here. Yeah, flushing of stripes is covered. And a very important architecture point is, of course, handling of the degraded mode, which is sort of, you know, the essential of all of that. We want to have a more resilient storage subsystem. So if a disk dies, the main I/O thread needs to handle that. In other words, there's a state change, this disk is dead, and if I do a read, and the allocation algorithm happens to select the dead device as the source of that read, then the main I/O thread will read the respective chunks of the same stripe off all the other devices and use the very same XOR algorithm and the very same function in the code to recreate the missing chunk. And then it can, of course, retrieve the read data of that, you know, recovered chunk, and the application will happily get its data. Maybe one main point is with RAID 4 and 5, we can only stand a single device failure within a RAID set. There is, of course, rate 6 solutions out there which address this area, which essentially means that you can stand 2 device failures in a rate 6 set. But I haven't gotten around to starting that implementation yet. There is an MD solution out there. And the whole thing about this implementation, by the way, is that medium and long term, we essentially want to have all the functionality we see in MD in device mapper so that we maybe have just one kernel subsystem in a couple of years rather than 2. So let's quickly walk the different functional areas of the interface here. I think most of this has already been covered. It passes essentially the mapping table line arguments, those which it gets access to, which start behind the keyword in the mapping table line. Remember, there was that start offset length, the keyword for, in this case, rate 4 or 5 it would be, and then the parameters after that will be handed into the constructor. It takes the arguments, parses them. If they are okay, of course, does syntax checks and so on, consistency checks. It allocates memory for rate set structure, which at runtime keeps track of the properties of that rate set, such as the list of devices and the offsets into the devices and so on and so forth, which are stored in these device structures hanging off the rate set structure. It allocates memory for the stripe cache for this set, and you can select the amount of stripes, for example, like 256 or what have you, and you can select the chunk size as well while you create the rate set. It creates the kernel thread. In other words, it creates a work queue to handle all the I/O and flushing and XOR calculation I mentioned before, and it starts it, of course. The destructor stops any ongoing recovery. Of course, one task of the main I/O thread is recovery. I want to initialize a RAID set, or the dirty lock told me that this and that list of regions is dirty because the system crashed. And the main I/O thread will retrieve that information, asking the dirty lock, and start recovery on those regions. And if this is still going on and I tear down that particular RAID set, that needs to be stopped, of course, unless I want to take a kernel oops. It destroys the work queue and frees, the resources such as the structures in stripe cache. The mapping function essentially avoids reader heads because they just, consume stripe cache capacity. So it basically just takes, regular reads. It takes the bio, which it gets from device mapper core, and pushes it onto an input queue. And if the main thread isn't already running, it kicks it and says, well, there's some work. Work on your input queue. So the main I/O thread, of course, has the bulk of the work to do. It updates the region hash and the dirty lock. So basically, if there's state changes, it needs to flush the dirty lock to disk, for example, so that you can retrieve that after a crash or whatnot. It starts recovery, already mentioned, using both of these modules. The region hash again keeps track how many writes are in flight to a particular region and only changes the state in the dirty lock if it comes to 0-1 transitions, right? So in the dirty lock, as it says, well, this region is dirty. Do some recovery work if you find it to be dirty. It works on the input queue by popping off the BIOS, which got pushed by the mapping function onto the queue, and tries to associate them to available stripes. Of course, the stripe cache could be fully busy because we already did a lot of work in the last main I/O thread cycle. So then it needs to push them back on the input queue and try again. If the stripe cache is idle, it will just allocate a stripe from an LRU, at least recently used list, change the address of the stripe, work the data in on writes, or check if the stripe is already up to date so that it can directly copy the data off, and so on. Degraded mode array set, it calculates missing chunks, and it looks how many stripes are up to date or clean. Clean means, a write has been performed, the data is on disk, and then it will end I/O to the upper layers, work is done, this I/O has been carried out, the read has been done, the write has been done. Calculates the parity chunks for dirty stripes covered already. Flushes non-up-to-date stripes are those which need data to be read off devices into the stripe. Dirty means there was write data was worked in. Parity has been calculated, so do the actual word and flush the chunks of the stripe to the disk and recover missing chunks in the read mode covered already. This is the simple picture as mentioned before, which essentially shows we've got the device mapper core, which talks to other lower level drivers, such as a SCSI driver, or such as maybe an ADA driver or whatever. And you can have an arbitrary amount of targets hanging off the device mapper core, being, you know, dynamically loadable plugins, and device mapper core knows, well, there is a new guy in the field which can do RAID 4 or 5, whatever. In user space, we have the device mapper library, and just as an example, the DM setup tool, of course, on the side, there could be LVM2, DM RAID, and so on, accessing the very same library. So that tries to simply explain how these things, you know, fit together and plug in. Now it gets a bit horrible. The definition of a mapping table syntax of a not too simple target, so it's not just, you know, zero with zero arguments or so. Quick run through it because we only have like 7 minutes or so to go. So of course we need to define the start and the length as usual of the segment we are defining, and as you have seen in examples, you can have many segments in a single mapping table. For a RAID 4 and 5 target, you will typically just have one segment, right? Because you combine that and that amount of disks to have a redundant combination. But you could have more because the device mapper core allows you to do that. Then you need to have the keyword RAID 4 or 5 to select the particular mapping target. You need to select, as we've seen with the mirror target, a dirty lock type, which could be the disk for persistent dirty lock, which is persistent in terms of it survives a system reboot or whatever, and RAID 4 and 5 will be able to retrieve regions to be recovered from the dirty lock. Then the dirty lock has a couple of parameters, won't go into much detail here. The RAID type, we talked about the support for RAID 4 and RAID 5 with different allocation algorithms, and that's what the RAID type is about. So it says RAID 5 left asymmetric or left symmetric and so on and so forth. There is a varial number of RAID parameters. If you put this to zero, the system, the target picks defaults, 64 K byte chunk size and 256 stripes. Or if you say one, you can define the chunk size. If you say two, you can give two arguments for the chunk size and the number of stripes in a stripe cache. So in other words, you can adjust to the needs of your application. So this is subject to tests if your file system performs better with less or more stripes with this chunk size and so on and so forth, which gives you flexibility which goes beyond what MD does in that regard. You can configure MD but the chunk size, the stripe, a number of stripes is fixed with MD RAID. Let's see, the number of devices, of course, which will be at least three, and can go up to an arbitrary number. I told you already in practice, our practical numbers are three up to seven or something. And the device to initialize. If I have a dead drive, I want to be able to select this particular device which has been replaced for the dead drive, because the rest of the devices, they keep my valuable data and parity. I only want to recover the data on the missing device, so I need to select it. And of course the usual device path and offset parameters here. Offset again allows you to pick some offset, for example, pass some metadata, pass some, if it's still there, partition table or logical volume manager metadata or something. And this is a real life example I tested, used to test, for example, like RAID set with roughly 136 gigabytes. This is the sector amount here for this size. It uses a core, in other words, transient dirty lock. Says, well, this has two parameters, which is namely the region size. So what is that, 4 megabyte region size or so? And it requires no synchronization. By default, the core dirty lock would resynchronize, resynchronizing the whole thing. You can insert a sync here, which requires a synchronization, which makes a whole lot of sense when you initialize a set or initialize a device after a replacement, after degraded mode. And again, all of that will be hidden in the future by some applications, such as DMRAID or LVM2. The regular user won't VI or something these tables. But if you test that, such as I do and others do, you can do it this way and use DM setup, as we've seen soon, basically to start such a mapping. We picked the RAID 5 with the left asymmetric allocation algorithm. And basically, zero means no variable RAID parameters. This means 64 kilobytes chunk size and 256 stripes. Three disks initialize the first one, index zero, and the usual tuples here, device path and offset. Another example, 780 gigabytes, and I used, the main difference is I used the persistent dirty lock, which is selected by this disk keyword, and I told her, well, synchronize the whole thing, no matter what is stored in this, arbitrary device here in the dirty lock. And basically, the region size is different here, 128 megabytes or so. A different RAID 5 algorithm used, and three devices again. So you get an idea how that looks. DM setup tool to finalize this. General, it has more functions than that, of course. In general, you say DM setup, create me some mapped device, Linux talk or whatever. And use a file, or you can redirect standard input to put the mapping table information in. File or standard input. You can ask the status of the map device. Map device is an arbitrary name, as I said, Linux tag, for example. You can remove it, and so on and so forth. So, for example, if I put in the mapping table information I showed you on the slide before into a file r5_3disks, I could DM setup create r5 name of the file. It would be loaded, and after that I had a /dev/mapper/r5, which I could macfs -txfs, for example. Mount it, copy stuff across, unmount, and so on, remove it, file system check, whatever. It's just a regular block device you can access. And pull, for example, one drive, and your data will still be there. What's the status and future directions, running out of time here? As I said, device mapper is in Linux 2.6 mainline because it got in the 2.5 development series. All the distributions are shipping it with LVM2, for example, and DMRAID is catching up as well to support the iterate solutions. The DMRAID 4 and 5 software I was talking about here is on my people page URL a bit later. So you can grab that patch, use a 2.16 something stable kernel tree, patch it in and try it out. In DMRAID, there's already experimental support for some Adderet flavors to make use of this DMRAID 4.5 functionality. And further down the road, we hope to have it in LVM2 as well. So, what was this all about? DMRAID essentially adds a higher level of resilience to device. Remember, we already had the mirroring stuff, which of course needs way more capacity to give you the resilience, because you duplicate or triplicate or whatever your data when you use mirroring. With the RAID 4 and 5 stuff, you essentially save space, because you only have a third, a fourth, a fifth, and so on when you have 3, 4, 5 disks of your disk capacity spent on redundancy information, namely the parity chunks I elaborated on before. And of course, it does RAID and RAID 4 and RAID 5 mappings. URLs, as I proposed. On my people page, Heinz M here, HEINZM, software DM, DM RAID 4 5, Google for RAID or whatever. There is a copy of this presentation as well. You find the patch. Device mapper in general is this link on sources.redhat.com, and it's probably worth, if you really want to support us, which we ask for by trying this out, you might want to join DM Devel. This lists where the discussions and so on and patch offerings for device mapper development go on. If you are interested in RAID 4, I'd rather say RAID 5. I don't know if anybody supports RAID 4 with Adorate. For RAID 5 support with your Adorate solution, such as HighPoint or whatever, you name it, then you might want to join this list to provide reports how it works or how it doesn't work or what you want or what you don't want, or if you want to offer free beer or whatever. So, Q&A. Any questions? Or is everybody shocked? There.
What about the write caches in this? Do you have to turn them off, for example, for crucial things like value loss?
Yeah, it's... Yeah, absolutely. It's, you know, just the normal point related to write caches. If you want to be sure and consistent that your data hits the surface with whatever solution, turn them off. Because if the data hits the write cache, it will be reported to the upper layers. The data essentially looks like it's on the surface. And such a solution won't survive write caching. Right? It does write caching by itself using the stripe cache anyway. Other questions? Yeah. Yeah, basically there's the two points. If you want to try it out in this early state, you will be needing DM setup, which is very low level development test tool thing. B, what I said is there is support in DM RAID, so DM RAID would be the MDADM for Adorate solutions, and further down the road we will have support in LVM2. So essentially when it comes to LVM2, when you create like linear or whatever logical volume today, you will be creating with some other, you know, option argument a RAID 4 and 5 volume.
I meant something different.
Okay. Ah, the daemon. Yeah, I missed the. Yeah. Gotcha. I missed the D. The idea is we do have a so-called DM event D, without the missing D. DM event D in lib device mapper, and basically applications make use of the DM event D, similar to the MDADMD functionality, by registering devices with DM event D. And once a device reports an error, the DM event D calls into an application-specific dynamical shared object, which carries out appropriate steps. For example, you defined a hot spare, and it basically changes the mapping to make use of the hot spare and reconstruct the set. Or in the mirror case, reconstructs a mirror and whatnot. So that's the DM event D functionality we are working on and starting to ship. Yeah, basically at the low level, I mentioned in my first point before, you'd use the DM setup status. There's other functions which gain you access to events, for example, or you can even wait on events with DM setup, like, you know, inscripting or something at this low level. But of course, the big picture is to have that covered with the event handling, with spare replacement and whatnot in applications using DM event D. Other questions? Then thanks for your time and interest.